Welcome, and thank you for standing by. All participants will be able to listen only until the question and answer portion of today's conference. To ask a question, please press star one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn your conference over to Ms. Kathy Harbin. Ms., you may begin.
Thank you, Julie, and thank you all for joining us today for the release of a new CDC Vital Signs on trends in suicide rates and contributing circumstances to suicide. We are joined by Dr. Anne Schuchat, CDC's Principal Deputy Director, and by Dr. Deb Stone, who is lead author of this study. Following the opening remarks, Dr. Schuchat and Dr. Stone will respond to questions. I'll turn the call over now to Dr. Schuchat.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us today. CDC works 24/7 to protect Americans against health threats. Each month in CDC's Vital Signs report, we focus on one of these issues and what can be done about it. Today's report contains new information about state suicide trends, the factors that contribute to suicide, and the implications for prevention. In 2016 alone, 45,000 people in the U.S. lost their lives to suicide. Unfortunately, our data show that the problem is getting worse. Suicide is one of just three leading causes of death that are on the rise, and these statistics don't begin to reveal the emotional, social, and financial toll that suicide exacts on individuals, families, and communities who are left devastated. Many have lost friends, neighbors, and family members to suicide, or have loved ones who have considered or attempted it. Between 1999 and 2016, suicide rates increased among all age groups younger than 75 years. During that period, middle-aged adults had the largest number of suicides and particularly high increase in rates. We found that suicide rates increased in nearly every state across the nation. These findings are disturbing. Suicide is a public health problem that can be prevented. For this Vital Signs report, we first analyzed data from the National Vital Statistics System to look at trends in suicide rates for all 50 states and Washington, D.C. We then looked at data from CDC's National Violent Death Reporting System, or NVDRS, which included information for 27 states in 2015 and looked at the circumstances around suicides among people with and without known mental health conditions. As a side note, CDC is now collecting these kinds of data in 40 states, D.C. and Puerto Rico, and Congress has provided additional funding in fiscal year 2018's Omnibus Act so that CDC can expand the system to all 50 states. Suicide is often attributed solely to a mental health concern, but according to our data, fewer than half of the people who died by suicide had a known mental health condition. Our research found that those people who died by suicide and did not have a mental health condition previously diagnosed were somewhat more likely than those with a mental health condition to struggle with relationship problems or loss, other life stressors, and experience recent or impending crises. But very importantly, these circumstances were likely to occur in all people who died by suicide, regardless of whether or not they had a diagnosed mental health condition. Suicide is preventable. That's why it's so important to understand the range of factors and circumstances that contribute to suicide risk, including relationship problems, substance misuse, physical and mental health conditions, job issues, financial troubles, and legal problems. With this information in mind, states and communities can develop comprehensive approaches to suicide prevention. One example of a successful program is from the United States Air Force Suicide Prevention Program. This program, which includes 11 policy and education initiatives designed to increase social support, social skills, and help seeking, shifted the culture of the Air Force away from viewing suicide as an individual-oriented mental health concern to a larger service-wide problem impacting the whole community. After the program was begun, the Air Force saw a 33% reduction in suicide as well as reductions in other related problems. By increasing awareness of the range of circumstances contributing to suicide risk and acting to address them through a comprehensive approach, we could reach our national goal of reducing the annual suicide rate by 20% by 2025. Today's report suggests we have a lot of important work to do to reach this goal. Nearly all states had increasing suicide rates between 1999 and 2016, and 25 states had rate increases of more than 30%. So how do we work together to reverse these numbers and help save lives? On the federal level, government agencies are tracking the problem of suicide to understand trends and groups at greatest risk, developing, implementing, and evaluating what works to prevent suicide in communities, supporting local, territorial, state, tribal, and other partners to prevent suicide, and working with the public and private providers to advance the national strategy for suicide prevention. In states and communities, close coordination of activities between public health agencies and other sectors of society is critical for preventing suicide. Necessary partners include health and mental health care providers, social services, first responders, educators, faith communities, and the media. States and communities can and should take action now. To help prioritize prevention, CDC developed Preventing Suicide, a technical package of policy programs and practices. It features the best available evidence for states and communities to guide their prevention activities. Some of the strategies are designed to prevent suicide risk before it emerges in the first place. These strategies include teaching coping and problem-solving skills to help people manage life's challenges, promoting safe and supportive environments, including safe storage of medications and firearms among people at risk, providing temporary help for people struggling to make ends meet, and encouraging connectedness so people are less likely to feel alone or isolated. Other strategies in the technical package are designed to support people who may already be struggling by providing effective treatment and crisis intervention strategies. Health and behavioral health care providers have an important role to play in suicide prevention as well, so that nobody in these systems falls through the cracks. Policies and protocols that prioritize patient safety and that help get people into ongoing care, especially during care transitions, can help prevent suicide. Last and very important, the technical package describes approaches to prevent future suicide risk among people who have attempted suicide or have lost a friend or loved one to suicide. You can find the link to the technical package on our Vital Signs website. Preventing suicide takes everyone: parents, employers, teachers, coaches, religious leaders, healthcare providers, and people affected by suicide. Everyone in the community can help prevent suicide risk by learning the warning signs of suicide and how best to respond effectively. Together, we can work to bring hope and save lives.
Thank you, Dr. Schuchat. Julie, we're now ready for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1, and you will be prompted to record your first and your last name as well as your organization. Our first question comes from Adam Davis with the Washington Times. Your line is open.
Hello. So I see that Nevada is the only state where the rate of suicides have actually gone down since 1999. Why is that?
Thank you for that question. Nevada has a high rate of suicide, and the rate stayed high. They actually have the ninth highest rate in the country. So we believe they'd continue, like the rest of the states, to have an ongoing challenge with suicide prevention. And the reason that they didn't go up probably is that they were already at such a high level. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Carla Johnson with the Associated Press. Your line is open.
This is a small detail, but could you clarify whether the overall U.S. rate is 15.6 per 100,000, as in the introduction to the report or 15.4 as in the supplementary table? Thank you.
Let us get back to you on that. It may be a question of the states included, but let us get you that later.
Thanks.
Oh, hold on a second. Sorry. You do. Okay, go ahead.
So the rate in the table is based on six consecutive three-year averages, and so you'll see a difference when you're looking at it that way versus just the rate of the whole population in 2016.
Thank
so
you.
It's a single-year rate versus a three-year average.
Got it.
Next
Thank
question.
You.
Oh, did you have a follow-up?
No, thank you.
Our next question comes from Ben Carey with New York Times. Your line is open.
Thanks very much. You know, you mentioned that it's the one of three leading causes of death that's on the rise. What are the other two?
Alzheimer's disease and drug overdoses.
Okay. And I just have another one on firearms. And I'm not sure. I'm looking through the report now. Have you found changes in methods that are worth mentioning? For example, is overdose on the rise or on the decline? What's some of the data say there?
This
guns,
report,
for example. Yeah.
Yeah. This report looks at the circumstances for 2015, so it's
okay.
A single year look at
okay.
The circumstances. That would be a different report, and so we don't have that information. Today we did the trend analysis was the state specific rates going back to 99, so we just have 2015 on the means. Did you have a problem?
I think so. You can't do the trend analysis because you're looking at a snapshot of a year, right, on this particular report.
That's right.
Okay. But what does the trend analysis from the previous year say? I mean, I don't know if you have that right there in your pocket, but you might in terms of the changing, what's happening in trends and using methods. I mean, for example, with guns, is it going up, down, sideways? What's happening,
We typically see that firearms make up about half of all suicides, and that tends to be pretty consistent.
Right.
Next question, operator.
Our next question comes from Brianna Ely with Politico. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I was just wondering if the CDC has done any new research on suicide rates among chronic pain patients. And then second question, just wondering if there's any concern about the recent efforts to limit prescription opioids that might contribute, if pain patients that, do need opioids have trouble accessing them. We've heard anecdotal stories that some people are led to suicide if they're in so much pain. So I'm wondering if that's something that the CDC is researching or addressing at all.
Our report found that physical health problems were present in about a fifth of individuals as circumstances considered to lead up to the suicide. That doesn't differentiate whether it was, intractable pain versus other conditions that might have been factors in a person's actions. The issue of pain is very important, and the U.S. government and Health and Human Services are working on comprehensive pain management strategies. The NIH, of course, is investing in innovative methods, medications, and other approaches for pain management, and we have issued guidance for treatment of chronic pain in terms of the opioid issue and the harm that can be done. We don't have other studies right now, but I would say that the management of pain is a very important issue for CDC and Health and Human Services right now.
Okay, thank you.
Next question.
Our next question comes from Kathleen Doney with covering for WebMD.
Hi, good morning. Do you have any breakdown of suicide rates by month in the country or any trends in seasons with the highest rates that you could share?
There's some analyses of days of week and month of year and season. And I'll let Dr. Stone expand on that.
So there's a recent paper that just came out and basically showed that suicide rates are increased between March and September. It tends to be the months where there's the highest rates.
And is there any interpretation of why?
There's a lot of different factors, of course, that contribute to suicide, and so it's a little bit hard to say without further research why those months particularly.
Can you give us a citation for that paper?
We can get that to you after the call.
Okay.
And remind me who you were again?
KathleenDoney@gmail.com, D-O-H-E-N-Y.
Okay. Next question.
Our next question comes from Susan Scuddy with CNN. Your line is open.
Hi. You highlighted the fact that middle-aged adults had the highest increased rates change. Can you speak to the possible reasons why this group stood out?
You know, this is a very important population right now in terms of some of the national statistics. We're seeing middle-aged adults have higher rates of drug overdose, and we're also seeing, you know, the so-called deaths of despair emerging in some of the social science literature. It is hard to say. I can say that increases in suicide tend to correlate with economic downturns, and some of the economic downturns may have left some middle-aged populations really hard hit. But there are probably many factors that that feed into the finding. Of course, importantly, we saw increases in all ages except those over 75. So while the increases were most striking in the middle-aged group, they were present in all the other groups over 10. So it's a national problem of wide scope that we need comprehensive approaches for. Next question.
Our next question comes from Andrew Seidens with Congregational Quarterly. Your line is open.
Hi there. Thank you. It's Andrew Seidens from CQ. Do you think that there is overlap between these numbers and the opioid or drug overdose death rate?
Yeah, thank you for that question. Substance misuse was a factor in 28% of the suicides in the 27-state analysis, and intentionality can be complex to determine in a medical investigation at the scene of death. There is probably some overlap in terms of people who died by suicide using opioids for that purpose, but there are probably also some overdoses that were not deemed suicides because insufficient information was available. So the National Violent Death Reporting System works hard with a variety of data sources to identify both intentionality and then the other circumstances, and so these data are really the best that we have. Next question? Or follow-up question from you?
If you don't mind, is there anything more you can say about the methods, I guess, by which people took their lives? You said that firearms tend to be pretty consistent, if I heard that correctly. Is there anything else you can say?
Yeah, the leading causes, the most common method was firearm, followed by, hanging and suffocation, followed by poisoning, which includes the opioids. Opioids were present in 31% of the individuals who died by suicide and were considered the means of death. So, you know, as Dr. Stone mentioned, firearms have shown up as nearly half in fairly consistently over time. That 48% is for the 27th state analysis, the 2015 data.
Thank you.
I would say, related to that one of our recommendations is assuring safe storage of medications and firearms as one of the approaches to prevention. very important to have safe storage. Next question, operator.
Yes, our next question comes from Liz Sabow with Kaiser Health News. Your line is open.
Hi, I wanted to ask you about the percentage of people with mental illness. I've had many psychiatrists tell me that 90% of suicides are related to mental illness, and you found a much lower rate. Is it possible these people were undiagnosed, or is this simply more accurate data than we've had in the past?
There are a couple things I'd like to say. Our data suggest that suicide is more than a mental health issue. We know we need improved access and treatment for mental health conditions and better recognition and diagnostics because there are still stigmas and still reasons that people don't present for care. But we think that a comprehensive approach to suicide is what's needed to make sure that we can get prevent suicides and identify concerns earlier. So I do think it's possible that we have some under-recognition of mental health conditions in our data, both because conditions hadn't been formally diagnosed and because those left behind may not have been aware of the mental health diagnosis that an individual carried. But I think a very important point is that if we only look at this as a mental health condition or a mental health issue, we won't make the progress that we need. We feel that communities, institutions, families, faith-based institutions can really play a role, as can state and local health departments and the healthcare profession. So we'd like people to recognize some of these circumstances and factors that led up to suicide in a number of cases and help people, reach out, support those around you, look for those warning signs in people you love and care for, and help with earlier support. We called out both the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline as a 1-800 number people can call, whether you're considering or whether you have loved ones that may be. And we also called out a great website, be the 12.com, which can help people who have colleagues or friends struggling know how to help them. So we don't think that we can just leave this to the mental health discipline to manage. We think we all have a role to play, and that together we can prevent suicide. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Kay Su with Tsingtao Daily. Your line is open.
Hi. I just wondered, do you have any breakdown of the suicide rates among different ethnic groups?
Right. In the National Violent Death Reporting System, that the 27th state analysis, the population distribution, we found, about 84% of those in the study were white, 6% black non-Hispanic, 1.8% American Indian, Alaska Native, 2.8% Asian, and then 5.4% Hispanic. That's not really in comparison with the populations in those states, and I think that those data are part of other analyses, but not this report. We think suicide can happen to anybody, and we all, I think, can be on the lookout for those in our families, our friends, our loved ones, our colleagues, to try to identify opportunities for prevention. Next question.
Our next question comes from Deborah Browser with Medscape Medical News. Your line is open.
Hi. Yeah, Liz from Kaiser actually asked my question, but I have a follow-up then about it. It was about the 54% rate. About the people who died by suicide did not have a known mental health condition. And just making sure that two quick follow-ups, if you don't mind. Number one, it's not, like you said, it's not saying that those with mental illness are not, that's not a risk factor. Is that correct?
Right. And just importantly, among those with mental health conditions, preceding factors, life stressors, relationship problems, imminent crisis was common. So there were preceding factors in both those with and without mental health diagnoses, and we think those preceding factors can be, you know, a reminder for us to reach out when you know somebody's going to be going through, you know, they've just lost their job, broke up with a partner, you know, that those are the times, you know, to really support each other and make sure that for those who aren't coping well, that we can help, you know, that we help them get the help that they need. So we know that, you know, severe depression can lead to suicide, but it's very rare among those with chronic depression. So suicide is a kind of a special case, one that we've learned is preventable, and where there's several evidence-based strategies that can help. So that was our key message here, not to say it's not important for people who are struggling to get help, including mental health support, but that this is a bigger issue than that. We have time for one last question, operator.
Thank you. Our last question comes from Heidi Splee with Clinical Psychiatry News. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering whether you could expand a little bit more on what healthcare providers in particular should look for, or what resources they might want to try and have or make available to look for some of these warning signs or people who may be at risk who don't have the mental health conditions.
You know, one thing I'd point to is to be aware of transitions, you know, a person moving from one system to another, maybe inpatient to outpatient or substance use treatment to another community service, that those transitions can be stressors, you know, transitions from the military out of the military or from, I've learned, from pro sports to post-pro sports can also be an issue. We do think that high-quality, ongoing care focused on patient safety and suicide prevention is important for health systems to build into their approaches and to train providers in adopting proven treatments for patients at risk of suicide. It's not necessarily something that is a big part of a primary care clinician's training, but there are, you know, obviously warning signs to look for and then ways to help people get the care that they need. I think that is I'm going to turn it back over to our press office.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Shookit and Dr. Stone, and also reporters for joining us today. If you have follow-up press questions, you can call us at 404-639-3286 or email us at media@cdc.gov. Thank you for joining us. This concludes our call.
Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at this time.